Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is Mark, and today I'm joined by Corey Wilness with the Croptimistic Technologies. Man, thanks for taking the time to talk intention with me today.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
Cool. Let's go. What does it mean for you to be intentional, Corey?
I guess it's probably the most important is just a passion for what I do. Keep me in the business long term. Just focused, and then I guess you could say sort of taking control of what I want to accomplish. You know, I've always felt like I just want to own success. Failure's not an option.
Yeah. That's a really unique answer. When you're in the passion, like when you get to do something you're passionate about, how does that feel different for you? How does that make it different for you than, you know, just the other stuff that we got to do on the day to day?
Well, I guess I've always been big picture, you know, like I'm a CEO today, but I guess you could say I was an entrepreneur for 16 years and a CEO for 4, became a real company, so to speak. So, sure. I mean, I just felt like I was passionate about building what we're building. So, I mean, it's more just I think I have the skills and the vision and, the operational understanding of how things need to execute and put all those things together. And you really love what you've done and what you've built. And so it's not something you have to think about. You just get up every day and passionately want to go and keep moving things forward.
Yeah. It seems like you've pursued passion. You've worked in a lot of interesting things and done some, you know, created some products, but then now all of a sudden things are growing. And how does that require more intention, less intention? Are you delegating that out more? Like, what does that look like for you now?
I think you always have to have very deep intention. It's just as you grow and the business is growing, then you're growing as to try and, you know, get people in the right chair. So I mean, some of it's really good because you can hire specialists, right? You can hire people that are specialized at what they do. Whereas before, as being a CEO, you're in the early days as a scale up, you're kind of doing everything.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So now as you get more specialists around you, those people support you better and you're better able to focus on the vision and the large scale needs of the business. And it's kind of the fun stuff in general, right?
Absolutely. Well, I've had a couple of other founders on the podcast so far, and it's always interesting to hear the backstory of how they went from, you know, maybe whether it was a one-man show or just a small team of people to now things are scaling and we've got more people. What's required for you to make sure that you're staying now strategic since you've got more people that you're responsible for?
Well, I guess for me personally, that's not really a problem. That's kind of what I've been good at and what I enjoy doing. So
sure.
Probably the bigger challenge for me is to not keep upsetting like operational things and trying to bring structure in and good processes so that, you know, the company's operating really well. Yeah. I don't have a COO at this point in time. I kind of carry those duties as well. So yeah, you just have to be careful that you're not trying to get too far out ahead people, and that's when things start breaking, and you know, that's not a good thing for anyone.
Sure. Absolutely. Cool. Well, let's shift a little bit. Talk about talent. What's your strategy for being intentional about attracting and retaining good people?
Well, I kind of think I built our workforce around like what I wanted to do. So, I first started my own company in 2003, I mean, we have a very seasonal business, so there was a time of year when you're working extremely hard, probably like 80 hours a week, and then there was a slow time. And what I didn't like about my previous job is that the slow time, you still go in and put in your 40 hours a week, and there really wasn't much recognition for how hard you worked. And I had a young family and stuff, so I said, I'm not doing that. I'm creating a culture of when it's slow, we're going to take time off. So we've stuck to that as our probably 50, 60% of our staff operate on that premise, maybe even more, where we're super busy, we build up flex time, and then when it's not busy, you're free to go, right? We don't hold people back. We don't stop them from taking their vacation time. Everyone knows when they're free to go. So I mean that's the type of culture that people either love or they hate, right? So which is kind of good because I would say people looking in say, oh, this is the kind of place I want to work. Basically, almost all remote. We do have offices and stuff, but people don't come into them, generally speaking. So everyone's kind of working independently. We have a lot of professional staff, so these people have already proven themselves that they can be responsible and go get things done, and you don't have to babysit type of thing. So I mean, that's kind of our culture, and a certain amount of people will see it's not for them, right? They need 8 to 5. They need to go to an office every day. And we have some positions like that as well, like our executive positions and software developers and different things like that. But in general, I think it's kind of a unique culture, and that's probably the main thing about our culture that's different. And we're still a small company, only 80 staff, so it's still pretty grassroots feeling around, like you're never. I talk to almost all the staff on a regular basis, and yeah, I think that's our culture is what keeps the talent coming in. People recommend it to their friends, and yeah, it's actually getting easier and easier to find staff in a very difficult world to find professional people for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to the piece that you talked about during the busy times, we're sort of stacking up some of that flex time. So in the non-busy times, we can actually go leverage it. I literally was just in a conversation with one of my coaching groups yesterday, and some of the challenges that these guys have had is they've made moves within the organization to create more capacity for them to be strategic as the leaders. But then what they end up doing is just filling it with more stuff. Right. So it's like we create this capacity during certain times of the year, but instead of actually maybe either taking it off or being strategic with it or whatever, we just fill it with more things to do. Right. And I think that's super common across the industry for sure.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, we're all prone to that. Hardworking people are prone to that, I feel. So, I mean, I guess we kind of force our staff to take time off.
But otherwise they won't, because we're not wired that way. You have
Well, I mean,
to be
the
intentional
laws,
about it.
yeah, well, the laws, I mean, if people are building up overtime, basically, call it flex time or vacation time, well, then you have to pay them out too. Right. So from a CEO standpoint, it's like, well, no, we're not pay you out. Like, go see some family, take some time off, refresh your brain. And I think we've all realized it takes a good week, maybe even longer sometimes, right? To get, disengaged from your job and allow yourself to be free again. And yeah, people, when they're have a little refreshing time, I find that they're more productive after. I think that's a well-proven fact.
I think we can all agree that we do that. Just most of us don't. Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this, and our coaching programs and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. So what you talked about that that part of your culture. Is there anything else that's been really important to you about being able to build an intentional culture? And one of the things you mentioned, I just want to tap back on this, is you had some experiences that you maybe didn't enjoy as much. So when you said, okay, this is what I don't want, when I build my own thing, it's going to have this, right? It's going to have more. So what's really important for you about building that intentional culture there?
Well, one thing I felt like we did wrong was when we first started hiring professional people, we probably went more from the resume and their experience, and it just didn't always work out from a culture perspective. So my co-founder and I, Derek Massey, they're the only two C-level people at the company. We decided we're going to start just hiring for people that are a fit. Like when we interview people, if we really like them, they feel that they'll be a fit for our culture, even if they're not maybe the best candidate from a skills and experience standpoint, we'd rather hire for culture and then watch them grow in the company. And that's been probably more successful. So I feel like that's really important. We've spread that throughout the company too. Like, make sure that you get that feeling that everyone's going to enjoy working. Because we're an agriculture company. It's different, right? It is a little bit different. So
you bet.
And the other part to the answer is that is, like, I feel like I have high expectations. We're very productive. We expect a lot of efficiency. It's time to go. We get things done. And so over the years, rather than like bringing in the high level people, we've just promoted our best people from within, and they've brought that culture with them. Like, they were expected to go out, work hard and get stuff done. And so they did it. So that's sort of the culture that's been continued on. And now that we've just sort of more or less promoted from within rather than hiring externally. And so, like, low performance people, if they can't keep up, they tend to just either go away because they can't deal with it, mm-hmm. or we have to let them go in the odd case. But so that's probably the two of the things that are culture that our staff, like, and they all enjoy it, right? They love when we hit our goals and we get things done on time. So yeah, that's been really important.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Fascinating stuff. Well, let's talk a little bit more about you. What's been a big hurdle that you've had to overcome, Corey, over the course of your career?
Yeah, well, there's probably a lot because, I mean, I feel like I wasn't trained to be a CEO, right? It's just, I grew into this role. I started a company and now we've built it up. And so you're here by default. So, I mean, certain things, I probably, the biggest one in the last few years as the company's really grown is just like more of a self-awareness and maturity. Mm-hmm. Things like social media and stuff. I always felt like I was pretty offensive, pretty defensive, and that helped us get our name out there. And social media really did help, but it also probably burnt a few bridges. So trying to be a little bit more balanced that way. I was kind of maybe more of a ruthless on execution person. Mm-hmm. Use that comment a lot where it's like, we have to execute. Now I'm probably more of a firm but fair person. We're trying to, you know, be more balanced.
Yeah. So,
I mean, as you become a CEO, like for me, mostly it's been now it's, you know, the people are looking to you to lead them. So what type of a person do you want to be? Like, what kind of a culture you want in your company is the culture you have to live by. So it's been a big personal challenge for me to do that. So yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I've had to overcome as a leader, just my own humility.
It's really a journey of self-awareness, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say, you know, if there's somebody who's a future wannabe CEO, maybe they're a new CEO, or even just a team leader, right? That's learning, that's on their own journey of self-awareness right now. What would you say to someone who maybe feels a little bit like they're stuck on an island right now. All the eyes are looking to them. People are looking to them for leadership. And that can be, as you and I both know, that can be a very lonely place from time to time, right? So what would you say to them?
Well, you know, I think we're just, I don't have a great answer for you, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think I can give you the answer of what we're doing. I don't know if it's the right answer, but I would say just we're all growing together, right? Like everybody's growing together. So no one's perfect at their job. We're all learning. So when you kind of like take that down a level, so this year we moved three people up in positions from sort of management to director level positions, supervising a lot of people, a lot of authority, a lot of processes that we're asking them to build out. Like they're very challenged. But with that example, like we just talk all the time. Like we have to have regular meetings. We talk through things. We're all trying to get on the same page, you know, and we're not expecting perfect decisions every time. We always come up with a look at just, let's just do what we think is best. If it doesn't really work, we can change it and tell the staff that this is what we want to try and get feedback and stuff. So, yeah, I feel like it's just a more humble approach. It's just like, you know, every company is different, so nobody has the answers. You just, if you create a good team, good, healthy team, I think you just all move together in unison and, you know, then mistakes don't feel like they're on one person's back either. It's just like, you know what, yeah, we'll all own this together. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it sounds like you've created a real team sort of atmosphere.
Yeah, well, very much so. I feel like we're all, like, as we grow, it's, you don't know where the next hurdle's coming from, right? So you're always just prepared and keep knocking down the hurdles as you can. And if you trip and fall, well, you just pick yourself up and again. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, good stuff, man. What's who's been somebody you've admired in your career?
Well, you know, that was a really good question. I had to think about that for a while. But I think the number one is, must sound kind of corny, but number one was my dad, mm-hmm. actually, just growing up on a farm and stuff. And, you know, it was a humble farm. It wasn't a elite farm. It was back in the 80s. Times were tough up here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he just taught me hard work, right? Just hard work. And there was no such thing as cell phones back then. If you're out in the field and you had to get something running, you just get it done, figure it out, right? So
yeah,
kind of grew up in that culture. And so, I mean, that really helped me, especially in the early days. And it sort of stuck with me, sort of that work ethic. And I also thought of another person, actually, was my first general manager when I became a retail agronomist. And most people I felt like at the retails I worked at were, I'm not going to call them robots, but they're just doing their day-to-day jobs, right?
Yep.
Whereas my general manager was very much a people person. Had a great attitude. He really made me feel valued and talked to me all the time and helped build, kind of spent 8 years helping me build my career and teaching me how to appreciate people and stuff like that. And I feel like that was really important for me too. Just, he's gone now. That mm-hmm. fella, like he meant a lot to me. So yeah, mm-hmm. those are probably two people that really helped me in the early days, you know, become who I am today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I love hearing the stories of people that, whether they learn from their dad or a manager or someone, a mentor somewhere along the way, because anybody who's in a leadership role is really there because in a way we stand on the shoulders, and there's a quote about that I don't remember, but we do stand on the shoulders of those intentional leaders that went before,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I learned my work ethic from the old man who would there were easier ways to get things done, but that didn't build character. Right. And so, you know, it's like, no, the kid can do it. And I learned a lot, you know, you learn a lot when you're running a pickaxe and digging, yeah. Or in my case, growing up on a fishing bait operation, you know, running a leech boat all summer, you know? So we grow, we become a lot of who we become in those moments for sure. So, and it's, yeah, well, one of the reasons I ask people to talk about it is I want them to see that now that you're in a leadership role, It's a really important level of responsibility. I don't care what the title is, but people are looking to you. And often I find as leaders, we downplay the importance of what we're saying. We don't think, and it's a self-awareness thing. We don't recognize how important the words are that are coming out of our mouth, or the fact that you took an extra minute to just talk to the person or help coach them through something challenging, or coach them up to be able to do something better. So when we have leaders who are more aware of the fact that what they're saying, what they're doing is really important right now, I think it catalyzes more intention in those moments. Does that make sense? That's what I'm trying to influence here as we get this resource in people's earbuds.
I think, I mean, those people lived intentional lives, right? Like in how they dealt with things and how that they operated the businesses that they were in. So yeah, good influences in that regard, or, you know, helps you build your own confidence and builds in values, you know, the important ones. And, you know, then success is no accident then, as you keep moving through life, you know, those kind of people that built with intention like that are really helpful.
Sure thing, man. What are we, I know you're a reader. What should we be reading?
Well, I read a lot of books. I have read a lot. So I think the ones that influenced me the most were the Jim Collins books.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
good,
I mean,
great.
Probably pretty common ones.
Yep.
But one I've read them through a couple times. Another one I really like was the Blue Ocean Strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, I read a lot of those kind of books. It's sort of like How to Be a Maverick and those types of books where I just really enjoy like doing something different, do something new that other people haven't gone, you know?
Yep.
Just,
what do you think? What's Blue Ocean in the ag industry right now?
It's us.
Yeah.
No.
It was set you up for a softball there.
Well, I don't know. There's plenty of opportunities. Obviously, I'm in the ag tech field, and the longer I'm a CEO in ag tech, I mean, you come with you to basically answer the question with blinders on, right? That,
sure.
You know, there's a great opportunity with technology, but it's a really sort of hard industry to get technology into. It's just sort of entrenched and, you know, general practices and farmers love iron and stuff like that. And technology hasn't really been a part of that, but I mean, it's slowly but surely changing. And obviously, I guess that's what we're invested in. So I feel it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. Is there a kind of like a Moore's Law in the ag tech space, do you think, where whether maybe it's just the rate of adoption will start to go faster and faster over time? I'm just curious on your take on that.
Yeah, I guess that could be a long conversation about adoption, but having been a person that's more from the grassroots side, you know, like grew up on a farm and sort of like was in the consulting business for a long time before we started tech. I mean, we've sort of built our tech so that the farmers don't do anything. Like all the hard stuff happens with us as professionals. It's more, to me, it's more modeled after like the legal industry or the accounting industry, where, you know, once you become a business, you don't do your own taxes, right? Like you have a professional. Like, why you hire a professional? Because these people are going to save you tons of taxes and all the pain and suffering related with doing this. And you show up and they just tell you what you should do, and they make the transactions, they make it easy, right? And they get it right 9 times out of 10. Well, I'm happy, right? And it's not that expensive for that. So that's kind of way I see the adoption curve right now, is relying on these people that are already wearing 10 different hats, people that are farmers. Like there's a lot of things going on there. That technology is just the one more thing. Let's face it, it's not easy to work with, right?
Right.
Like, yes, there's the new generations are, you know, adopted, picked it up fast, but they don't know how to operate a farm when they're young, right?
Sure.
As farms grow and become more complex, I mean, there's a lot going on. So my personal feeling is that it's a professional services industry. And that's kind of where our focus has been on the adoption, is our farmers don't really do anything. They just sign a check, right? And load a prescription and tell us what their budget is and like various small things. So I think if we, that's our intention anyway on the adoption side, we don't really have a problem with adoption. Everyone else talks about that. We're taking as much growth as we can, and we have 99% retention year over year on acres.
Wow.
Keep coming back. There's a subscription type model. So,
I think you guys are really trying to just, you're removing a lot of the friction for your customer, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just headaches, right? Like I look at my business, I mean, I'm a CEO. The people always say that if you can hire it out to someone that can make a better decision than you, why would you want to do it? So that's the problem with technologies. Everyone builds it with the thinking that the farmer is going to go out and do this. They don't have time, and they may or may not even want to do it. Right? So yeah, that's kind of where my bias comes from, is because I spent all that time working with farmers. It's like, these people don't want one thing. They just want it done for them.
That our coaching business exists for the exact same reason. I was talking to people that do what you do, and we were talking about the importance of coaching your employees. And they, you know, I was in Minot, North Dakota in the winter of 2014. When I remember exactly what this GM said to me, he said, "I don't have time. I don't have time to do all the coaching, the feedback, the et cetera, all the things that are needed to groom these young professionals." So on a long drive back to Omaha, Nebraska, I thought about it. And then I got a hold of his phone number. I called him back and I said, "What would you just pay me to do the coaching for you then?" And that's how that was 10,000 hours of coaching ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're more like a consultant, I would say.
It would categorize business as a consulting business, but it solves for the fact that most managers, A, are not well schooled in how to coach, and B, are busy doing all the things. They don't have a lot of that strategic time on their calendars, like we talked about 20 minutes ago, right? And so, you know, they're looking for somebody who really has a passion, first of all, to be in people development and help their people, but take that off of their plate a little bit. It doesn't negate the entire responsibility of doing internal coaching, but it certainly removes a lot of the friction from that process and creates a better experience for the employee. That's what grew the business, you know, for us over the last decade.
Yeah, well, it's a very similar in concept to the way we've come, where initially we scaled a consulting business, right? And then when we became an ag tech company, now we're B2B and we're selling to other consultants. So I believe we have like 80 or 90 business partners out there now, and they have a, when they sign up, there's a training program. There's a support portal for every common thing that's out there. There's software to manage through the whole process, steps from 1 to 12. And so, like you're kind of coaching other people how to be good coaches. We're coaching other service providers how to be good precision service providers.
I like it. Cool. Yeah. Very cool. All right. What's the last couple of questions here for you as we bring this in for a landing, Corey? What do you do to keep your productivity high? How do you maximize your schedule?
Well, I mean, some of the basic fundamentals are like things like I have a good faith. I have a good family life here at home. I've got an exercise program, which you saw me, you wouldn't think I do it that much, but I try and walk all the time and do those kinds of things, and, you know, enjoy myself when I have my time off with family and doing things like that. And so that's sort of outside of work. Inside of work, I like really enjoy like all my staff meetings and stuff, working with the staff, and then everyone checking back in regularly on their progress and stuff. So I just feel like it's a day to day, week to week, just over and over routine. But I enjoy it. Keeps me passionate, keeps my energy up.
Good. That's good. Yeah, one of the things we talk a lot about on this show is the importance of vulnerability or lack of importance, depending on who I'm talking to. And I think there's a spectrum of how vulnerable can you be. And I think, you know, being in the CEO chair, I'm always curious, is it, do you, can you be too, is there too much vulnerability? How much do people need to say? How much transparency is important? And I'm just curious on your take on how important vulnerability is when it comes to creating an intentional work environment.
Yeah, I think it's very important. So a couple of things, like one is like sort of this thought of putting yourself out there. And I mean, social media is one place where that happens. And I feel like to a large degree, I've built this business on social media. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can't just like be nice all the time and say, you know, you're so great to everyone. I mean, sometimes you got to like dig in and, you know, do things different and, you know, be negative and positive and, you know, do things that other people aren't willing to do. Challenge the norms, right? You challenge the norms, that's usually getting lots of people upset with you. And so I feel like vulnerability is part of our DNA, where it's like, well, we're probably going to get a lot of pushback from people on this, but we're going to do it anyway. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I think that's generally low risk if you're always honest and, you know, as respectful as you can be. Like honesty, I think, I mean, if you believe that, you believe it. It doesn't mean you have to be like highly opinionated. You can be passionate about what you believe in. And I think everyone will respect those people and enjoys following them. And like in general, we don't have any gag order on our employees on social media. Go be as vulnerable as you want. That doesn't mean once in a while they don't say, okay, I'm watching. This is going to be interesting type of thing. You might not want to do this again, but I mean, And I mean, in general, in our business, I feel like we're quite vulnerable. Like we don't have long-term contracts with our service providers or our farmers. So 30-day cancelable contracts. Well, not a lot of investors want to see that. And we're like, well, we have 99% retention. Like we say, we provide you value or you're free to go. And so that takes down that vulnerability that we take on. Then I find the customer's like, oh, wow, I can leave anytime. So what's the risk, right? What do I have to lose? I'm not making some big decision. So, I mean, those are same with the staff. Like when staff sign up, it's like, you know, you're not going to sign something that says you can't do this for 2 more years. Or like, I feel like in general, those are vulnerability positions. But in general, people just want it to be that way, right? Like it's kind of like the right thing to do. And if you don't have anything hide, if you're all about integrity and stuff like that, what's the risk? What's the worst thing that can happen? So,
yeah. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. I mean, there's a lot of empowerment in there too, but you know, I love the, just taking the aspect of having a cancelable contract and the inherent risk that sort of comes with that. And that's something I've tried to balance in my own business as we look to switch to more of a MRR model versus a one-time fee, right? So I think it makes our business more scalable. Our product becomes more affordable to companies, but boy, it's tough to look at that because I got to keep them for at least a few months before that account turns profitable.
Yeah. Right?
And so you have to think about what's the, you know, but you do have to be in integrity. You have to be good. It has to be worth it. So yeah, that was fantastic. Very cool. Well, Matt, thank you for doing this interview. This has been a fantastic conversation, just learning more about this and a totally different, the ag tech sector. I haven't had a lot of ag tech folks on yet and getting to hear from a CEO and how you think about it, how you grow it and how you run your team. So thank you, Corey. Where should we go to reach out to get in touch with Croptimistic, any of your brands?
Probably the best place is our website, swapmaps.com.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it. This was fun.
You got it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.